You're listening to A Real Piece of Work. I probably shouldn't say it that way. You're listening to A Real Piece of Work, a jobs podcast for aspiring professionals, brought to you by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR, and Junior Achievement of the Heartland. Now here's your hosts, Matt and Joy.
Good morning, Matt. How are you today?
Joy, I'm doing great. It's a sunny day, despite the fact that it just turned wicked cold on us today. I will take the sun and be happy about it. And I'm sitting here pretty happy today because I've been fortunate with many of these interviews that somehow these worlds collide. And our guest today, as I was thinking about it, outside of parents, instructors, coaches, other parents that influence our kids' lives, matter a lot. And this individual is having a heck of a good impact on my daughter, which is so stinking cool. And so I'm really excited to talk to this guest today, but we'll get into that a little bit more later. Joy, what are you thinking about?
Honestly, same with you, Matt. I think that as I've had to spend a little bit more time away from my house, getting back into a full-time working mom role, some things shift from a mindset perspective. And just to your point, hitting the nail right on the head is that we are leaving our kids in the hands of a lot of different individuals throughout the day. And it's important. It's important to know who they are and to also get to know a little bit about their background so we can understand when we come home and have some conversations with our kids, maybe the right questions to ask. And so I love this opportunity to kind of take a different perspective, if you will, on a career and just the impact that it does have in small ways that it sometimes seems, but when we look back, they're bigger ways. So I'm really excited. Amber Matthews, welcome to A Real Piece of Work, the job podcast for young people. How are you doing today, Amber?
I'm doing okay, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Amber, would you humor us? And so it says here, you are the director of operations and a staff coach for FC United. What does that mean?
Yeah, great question. I'm not sure I completely know what it means every day. So honestly, it generally means just the day-to-day running and operating of the club and everything that encompasses. So honestly, it really depends on, you know, where we're at in the season, you know, what that exactly looks like. But I'm also the admin, so everything that comes, you know, everything that has to do with, you know, player registration, player cards, you know, registration for club events, tournaments, rosters. We have, you know, the communication with the parents, the coaches, different clubs, scheduling, accommodation for away games. That all pretty much goes under my umbrella. So it's not very clear maybe, but it just everything that has to do with the running of the club.
So what do you enjoy most about the job? Or maybe this is a twofold question. What do you enjoy most and maybe what's most challenging for you in this position and role?
Good question. I love coaching. I love being on the field and just being with the kids. That's my favorite part. I think there is a kind of twofold with that. I think even though I love that, it is a little bit challenging at times because it's weekends and evenings, right? So it kind of takes me away from my family, takes me away from doing the things that maybe, you know, I would like to do outside of work. Because especially when we're in the in season, it is a lot of evenings and a lot of weekends away. But I love it. I love working with the kids. You know, like what you guys said, you know, it goes beyond soccer. It's, you know, building those relationships with the players is what I absolutely love. And so that's where I get my joy. You know, another part that I found challenging and I've kind of got used to as time has gone by is although I love that things change every day, you have to be quite organized and have your ducks in a row and, you know, have your check sheet ready and kind of go through the day. And although that was maybe not my absolute strong suit when I first started, I've kind of got used to, you know, how to get through those things every day, so that I can get to, you know, planning my sessions and getting onto the field with players.
So Amber, as you know, our target audience are high school students or students in general, then secondarily, maybe their parents and some of their, maybe the educators that bring the podcast to them. We'd like to bring in one of our junior achievement students today to pose a couple questions to you. I think that you'll enjoy.
Hi, Amber. My name is Chase Buckheister, and I am an eighth grader at Harding Middle School. Coaching is typically a male-dominated profession, so my question to you is, what advice do you have for girls looking to get into coaching, and what was your pivotal moment when deciding to become a coach?
Great question. Honestly, you know, although it's a very male-dominated, I think that is they're trying to make that shift within, you know, U.S. soccer. You know, they're trying to encourage females to get into coaching a little bit more by providing, you know, female-only courses and maybe offering discounts in certain places. You know, that there's still, and I think it's got a little bit better since I was younger, but I think there's still a long way to go with that. You know, I think honestly, having the confidence and security within yourself is massive, having been able to kind of have that voice. And, you know, although it's important for both genders, I think that, you know, for especially for young girls, young females, to be able to see, you know, representation within the sport is massive. So that's, you know, as I got older, you know, when I first got into coaching, I started coaching when I was about 14. You know, with the really little ones at camps and different events that my club put on, you know, I would say that's at first, I just did it because it was, you know, some easy money in my back pocket and something that was accessible to me. So for anybody, you know, any young players, I would always encourage, whether it's basketball or, you know, softball, whatever, if you're slightly interested in it, go ahead and try it out. We have an internship program within our club. That has different tiers and levels to it. You know, you kind of earn more money as you go through. But that's a great way to just kind of get your foot in the door. And if nothing else, you know, you get some extra change in your pocket and, you know, it's very, very low commitment. We have some interns that only do an hour a week. We have some that do a few hours a week. And then we kind of bring them in for camps, you know, different, you know, spring breaks, the camp or, you know, summer camp or any events that we do over the winter. We bring them in maybe for a little bit more hours. But for the most part, it just kind of gets them to see whether or not it's something that they enjoy doing as well. And frankly, it's, you know, they get to build tools that they can take into whatever they go into next. So even whether or not they don't end up coaching at all, coaching little kids, you know, you have to have some sort of, you know, that confidence within yourself, assertiveness. You have to be able to, you know, think on your toes at times. You need to be a creative, you need to have some patience. So all those good things, that whether or not, you know, in 2 years from now, they never coach again, I think is, you know, is valuable to them in the long run. And also just also helps give back to the sport, that I think has been given, especially given me so much, you know, it's taken me all over the world. You know, I've played for a lot of different clubs. And, you know, I got a full scholarship to come and play in the United States, which is massive. And, you know, even got my master's degree paid for in the end. So, for me, that's when I started getting older and started realizing, how unrepresented women were, was one thing. And because a lot of females kind of get to the point where they just say, ah, it's not for me. And they kind of, you know, steer off in a different direction. I wanted to give back to the sport. And I wanted to be there to help younger players, and be a little bit more of a, you know, a figure that they could look up to in the sense of, oh, this person has done what I want to do in my career.
And then the pivot moment, did you have a pivot moment where?
I don't know if I necessarily, honestly, I, you know, some people know exactly what they wanted to do in their career, right? You know, you have young kids that know exactly what they want to do and they go, you know, full force into it. I was not one of those people. And I know that there's so many young kids that are probably listening that are in the exact same boat. I think it's important to highlight that. You know, I wasn't sure. Even after I graduated with my master's degree, I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do. I kind of fell into it. While I was in doing my, I did my graduate assistants on the women's soccer team. And that's when I really realized, oh, I really, really love this. It wasn't kind of a, you know, I was doing on the side and I really enjoy this. It was, oh, I really do enjoy doing this. I want to do this more. I want to continue doing this as my career. So I would say probably while I was getting my master's as a graduate assistant is when I really realized. But even then, I wasn't 100% sure exactly, you know, was that on the collegiate side? Was that a club? And what that exactly looked like.
I appreciate you pointing that out because I think it's very important for everyone to hear that it's okay to not necessarily know and to keep taking steps forward as they're feeling good. And eventually, at least for you, right, it's something just, it happened and it evolved out of something that you didn't even know was going to happen. So just being accepting of being in the moment and where you're at and taking that. So thank you for sharing that piece. So if I'm always important or I'm always interested rather in mentors. So obviously you being in your position right now, you are becoming, whether you realize it or not, you know, a lot of these tips and tricks that you just gave off to me, I mean, some of those resonated with me, not just from a sports perspective, but even from a personal and professional perspective. And so a lot of times I think some of those things you're saying are really making a bigger difference than you realize. So do you have anyone along your journey or your path that said some of those things to you that gave you that confidence or that like, I guess the confidence to move you forward to selecting this as the path that you wanted to take?
Yeah, definitely. I can pinpoint a couple coaches that I had and that I'll always remember for, you know, instilling that in me and giving me that confidence. And that's what I value the most of this now, right? Although maybe when I first got into it was for other reasons. Now what I value the most is building those relationships with the players, being there to be, you know, an emotional support system for them as well, because a lot of the time, you know, we don't know kind of what, you know, what they're going through in their home lives. And that has been massive through these last few years that I've realized, you know, how much of a difference that you can make just by asking someone, you know, and fully meaning, you know, how's your day going? You know, I'm really listening to them and just being there, you know, to help, to show them that you're going to be a constant, but also kind of being, you know, I'm not the softest, right? So I also show them in hard ways too at times, you know, and just being being consistent with that message, whatever the you know, I don't want to say rules, but whatever we kind of put about at the beginning of the season to stay consistent with that. So for example, you know, if a player is late for a game, they can't stop, no matter who they are, right? Even if it's our, you know, our top school goal scorer, I'm sorry, but you cannot start that game because I've got to show that's what's going to happen in real life too, right? It goes beyond soccer. It goes beyond winning games. It's important that I show, you know, the other side of things as well. And, you know, if we're having issues with, you know, issues with behavioral things or, you know, whatever it may be, that we can work on those things, but also kind of being, you know, taking them out of the situation at times if needed. So yeah, I can definitely remember two coaches specifically that I still look back on and you know, thank for everything that they did for me and how much they impacted my life. And I, you know, I want to try to be that for some of these players, and that's not always going to be able to be the case, but I try to be, you know, be a good role model, you know, show them, you know, the correct way. And sometimes I mess up, right? And being able to say, hey, listen, I let my emotions get the best of me in that situation. And just being real with them in those moments as well.
So Amber, I'm curious, you've touched on your personal experience as a player, education, little bit of an intro to what you do day to day, but what, in your opinion, from an education experience and skill sets, what exactly is going to help someone be successful for what you're doing today and beyond as a coach, somebody in the background that's, you know, running an organization, a sporting organization like FC United?
Yeah. So I got my, I kind of pivoted a few times, in my, what I, when I first came to America, I came in as an undecided major. I wasn't quite sure. I just came out to, you know, I knew I wanted to get a degree in something. I just wasn't quite sure what. And I was just excited to play every day. So that was my main thing. And then it was like, okay, now what do I want to do? I ended up, majoring in psychology. Just because I found it extremely interesting. And, you know, my parents, especially my mom, has always told me, you know, do something that you enjoy. So that's kind of where I got to psychology. I started doing, you know, prerequisites and enjoyed those classes, found myself, you know, interested to study it. Kind of got to my end of junior year and realized I'm not sure if that's where I want to go long term. So anyway, I took a gap year in between my undergrad and getting my master's. And I think that's, you know, something I would say is not maybe, I guess, accepted or talked about enough maybe in America and the way that things are done here. It's very, you finish high school and you're going to college and you're going to get, you know, you've got to get your job that you need to get or you get your master's. And I think that time, I also took a gap year after my high school year. I took a gap year again. And that's very, very common in Europe, to take a year to just try to discover what you enjoy, to also just travel, to have those experiences and give yourself a moment to just come down. I took a year then I got my undergrad. I took another year to try to figure out what exactly is it when I do. And that's when I realized, you know what, I'm not 100% sure still. Let me do something that is going to be valuable in many different aspects. So I decided to do my master's in business management. That's something that I thought, you know, everybody, you know, I could kind of go in so many different ways with that. So I think, although I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, where I was going to land, I always put my best foot forward, always made sure that I kept my grades up well. And that I was kind of going in the right direction. So I think my master's degree helped me in that sense. My graduate assistant, you know, helped to give me that not only the education but the experience needed. So you know, we work in as a graduate assistant, you know, breaking down the film every week, breaking down and analyzing that, working on the itineraries for the away games and, you know, figuring out, you know, where are we going to eat? Where are we going to stay? All those things that I'm basically doing now, but instead of one team, now it's 10 teams. So, you know, what I would say is just kind of keep putting one foot in front of the other and things will become clear. But, you know, if you're doing the things correct.
So you've given a great overview in general. And I feel like you maybe have already answered a little bit of this question, so apologies for the repeat, but typical day, typical week for you in your role right now. I think it's important for students and other people listening in to understand what that looks like. Is it a typical 9-to-5? I know you mentioned before there's some nights and weekends and things like that, but in general, you know, do you have routine? And then kind of as a second follow-up question to that too is, where do you find time to do continuous learning? Because it sounds to me like you're constantly, you know, there's all these new things that are coming up for you and to be able to make them applicable and to weave them into your job. When do you find time for that? And what are the ways that you do some additional self-learning?
Yeah, my good question. My day-to-day varies very significantly. I from where we're at in the season and also, you know, what we have going on in the club, honestly. So for example, right now we have, our Wynnum Magic this weekend. So it's a small tournament. We have, about 68 teams, 70 teams coming in to our facility. So the last 2 weeks have been a lot of organization on that side of things. So, you know, figuring out the referees, figuring out the schedule, figuring out, you know, making sure that we have all the, goals ready, that we have the fields lined, you know, sacks and everything for the referees, the rules in place, everything that goes along with making sure that the tournament takes place. And of course, unfortunately, you know, there's always going to be a team that drops out afterwards, and then you're trying to, you know, pick up the pieces after that. So my last couple of weeks has kind of been around that. We have a larger scale tournament in September. That's our biggest fundraiser of the year. We have about 170 teams come into that. You know, we have to manage 350 volunteers. You know, it takes about 6 months of planning. So that takes up, you know, a good chunk of our, you know, lead up to that event. But, you know, our winter season right now, I would say, is our slow season. So I only actually have to go up and coach twice a week. Whereas in the fall and in the spring, I have to be up there three times a week. So I wouldn't say there's a stagnant, you know, consistent schedule that I operate under. But there are different seasons, which I can kind of, you know, tell you already, you know, four, I'm up coaching three nights a week. And then on top of that, we're pretty much gone every weekend. In the winter, it kind of dials down a little bit. We do, you know, sporadic tournaments, more, you know, smaller scale, a little bit closer in distance, and then coach twice a week. And then in the spring, I'll go back up to three times a week. But all of our high school teams are in high school, so we don't actually coach them. So it kind of dials down a little bit in that sense. So yeah, I think it really, really depends on where we're at in the season. But I normally wake up and, you know, start work about 8 o'clock. I kind of, you know, normally the first thing I do is I'll get online and answer emails for an hour and a half. That normally puts another few things on my checklist to do. And, you know, my, like I said, the checklist just changes every day. For example, this Monday, we had a team managers meeting last Wednesday. So I just did a recap email to all the team managers for those that missed or for those that were there, just to give them a breakdown. You know, we had a club request a change of date for a spring ECNL game. So along with that, it's not just an easy switch. We've got to reach out to athletic trainers, reach out to the referees, switch the fields, make sure they're available, do all those things. Our spring schedule, I released that on Monday. We had a draft schedule released already, but we did a couple of tweaks and got that sent out to the members. So, you know, I don't do that again on Tuesday. My Tuesday looks quite different, but kind of get done around 3:30-ish. Mondays, right now, I don't have to go up to work, so I get the rest of the evening to myself, which is lovely. And then, you know, Tuesdays looks a little bit different. I am actually stop what I'm doing around 3. And then I'm on the fields. I do a private session from 4 to 5. And then I coach from 5 to 9:30. So I'm on the fields until 9:30 on Tuesdays and Thursdays from about 4 to 9:30. And then I drive home, and kind of the next day is a little bit lighter.
So Amber, appreciate the kind of the behind the scenes and the almost hour by hour, day by day breakdown, because I think honestly the students need to hear it. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind, gonna get a little personal. Can somebody make a buck as a coach in this world? Somebody running a soccer club, and maybe the progression even beyond club. What does that mean from an earnings potential?
Yeah. So I think it varies significantly from state to state. And then also varies significantly from the size of the club. But honestly, yes. On the club side of things, you know, there is an earning potential. I think also depends, you know, there's staff coach, you know, and then there's so many different roles within the organization. So it kind of varies there as well. You know, there's kind of my role. Then there's also, you know, there's just some clubs just have an admin, right? So they make maybe 15,000 a year, and they just do that. They may be a, you know, a single parent, they do it from their home, and it just really depends. And then you've got, you know, coaching director, you've got executive director, but you know, you could, you know, when we're talking about earning potential, you know, you could go up. I've seen directors make, you know, 100,000, 120,000. So the potential is there. You know, again, though, it really, really varies of, you know, what your capabilities are at a club, right? We have around 600 players, 550, something like that. You know, there's clubs in, you know, even, for example, in Des Moines, they're triple that, right? They're about 1,500. Now, if you look at some clubs, I have some friends that live in Florida, they have 4,000 kids, I think, right? So it does vary significantly. But honestly, yeah, there is a good, you know, for me, I would much rather do this and do what I love doing and earn a good amount than, you know, sitting at a 9-to-5 that I personally don't enjoy, right? So, and then again, you've got to look at what makes the most sense for you, whereas is, and that's the difference of the collegiate route and the club route too. There's the steps up are quite a lot harder, and it takes a lot longer on the collegiate side. And I wouldn't say that's the reason, the only reason I decided to go club, because I think for me, it's a lot more than about money. But you know, when you're on the collegiate side, it's tough. It's tough. You know, you've got some college coaches, assistant coaches at smaller schools that are making, you know, 25,000, 30,000 a year. You know, and you've got to do that for two years, 3 years, and then maybe you can be the head coach of a smaller school, and then you got to do that for a couple of years, and then you can kind of bump up to an assistant of a D2, and then you've got to do that for a few years, and then you get, you know, then head coach, and then you've got to, if you want to go D1, you've got to bump back down to assistant coach again. So it's a very, very long stairwell on the collegiate side, and it's tough. I've got some friends that are on that side of things, and you know, I love certain parts of it. I love that you get to work with one team every single day, and you get to go so much more in detail of the tactical side of the game, and I love that side of it. But it can be tough going a little bit on the, you know, the earning potential, you know, and how long it really takes to get there, and how many hours you're really dedicating to the job.
So I kind of have a more fun question as I'm sitting here listening and reflecting. I was fortunate enough growing up, I was in a small school. My dad was actually my basketball coach, right? And so that's different having your dad as a coach versus having someone else. And I still have friends this day that come up to me and they remember specific things he said, you know, during practice. And I can specifically remember too, or those one or two things that was repetitive. And one of them was like, we can't. If I use the word can't, if anyone on the team used the word can't, we ran laps. It was just like a thing. I don't know if some of my friends are still using that to this day. I know that resonates with me as well. You know, as soon as you said it, you knew, and you just started running because of that. So I was just curious for you, is there something that that you are like on repeat that you feel is important that you try to make like that impactful message with all of these students that you're coaching, you know, day in and day out? And if you don't have anything specific, that's fine too. I'm always curious to hear, you know, I think each coach has their own style and their own message. And it sounds to me like you've had a lot of experiences where like you're obviously really passionate about what you do. So what is that passion thing? What do you bring to your students or to your all of your players? What is it that you want them to know every single game that you're on repeat with them?
It's a good question. Honestly, that would be a great question for my players. So I bet you if you ask them, they could tell you five things that I say all the time. I can't think on the top of my head what you know exactly what. But I like that. You know, I don't think I you know, I specifically make them run or anything for comp, but I definitely don't like to hear them say, you know, negative things in the sense, oh, we're not going to be able to do this or we can't do this. You know, I want our players, you know, to go in there with belief, right? Whether or not, and you can be realistic with that belief in the sense of this is going to be tough, but you know what, if we band together, if we work hard, right, we can grind something out of this, and it's just being, you know, I think working together, you know, and having that belief together. And this was our first year in the ECNL, and we had some tough games, you know, and I can think of one specific game that we had no business getting, you know, winning that game. We had no business winning that game, but we just stuck to it. We just were so, you know, organized defensively. We just worked so hard and just, and we just got a lucky break, got a goal, and we just continued to fight. And we just, you know, we just did not stop fighting that whole game. And I think that's an important message for our players. And, you know, something that we kind of go back to quite often and at practice or in games that we talk about, because it's easy to give up. It's easy to go in like, oh, well, you know, that team, you know, that team has three teams per age group. We only have one. We've only got four teams. It's easier to give excuses, and it's easy to give excuses in sports. It's easy to give excuses in life. Or, you know, you can just kind of be the underdog in a sense, or you can be just see what you can bring and having that fight. And I think that's something that I try to give to the players and tell them that, you know, anything is possible. Anything is possible. If you guys want this, and if you work hard enough, and if you stick to a game plan, you guys can achieve these things, right? Sometimes it's not going to go your way. You're not going to win every game. But if you work hard enough and you stick to the plan, you will be able to achieve. You can achieve anything that you set your mind to.
I love it, but I think we're about towards the tail end here. Joy, unless you got anything that's still circling around your head?
No, I wasn't even looking at the time. You know me, I just, I think that this has been an amazing interview. Thank you. I know we have one follow-up from Matt, and I'm good to close out, yes.
Sounds good. So, Amber, you know, if you could tell your 16-year-old Amber things to keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to increase the chances of post-high school success and happiness, what might those be for you?
Yeah, I think I would just say, you know, just trust. Don't stress. Everything will work out. And luckily enough, I was kind of one of those kids that didn't stress too much about things and just let things happen. But again, going back to the point of, I had no idea what I really wanted to do. Right. And I honestly didn't even know that this job title, this exact thing even existed. It kind of just came about. And I just put one foot in front of the other. And like I said, always gave myself the best chance to get what I wanted. Right. So, you know, working extremely hard at, you know, I played at different levels. I played, you know, I played for Chelsea. I played for West Ham. And, you know, when I left that, I kind of, to come out to America, I wasn't 100% sure that was the best decision for me. I was kind of breaking in. It was in the first team. I was doing well. But I thought, you know what? I'm just going to try. I got offered a full scholarship, and I thought, I'm just going to try it out. Let's just see what happens. And I did, and I gave it my absolute everything. When it came to grades, I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, but I always gave my everything of getting the highest grades possible, so that I could continue kind of the upward motion. So I think I would just say, and I, like I said, to my players, to young children, whoever's listening, is just, you know, don't stress, right? Just kind of relax, and everything will work out if you put if you're doing what you should be doing, everything will fall into place.
Well, Amber Matthews, you really are a real piece of work, and we appreciate you being a part of the podcast and sharing your thoughts with the students today. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. I've enjoyed it. And yeah.
So Matt, this was this interview for me, everyone hits me differently for a different reason. And as I'm in my role right now, I'm working a lot with leadership and leadership development. I think that's important at any organization. But when you think about a leader, I think about Amber. I think about how similar and how parallel a coach and a leader really are. And if you're doing it well, you're focused on the people. And that's really what Amber talked a lot about how that's her passion. That's what's driving her. And that's, to me, why she's so successful in what she does. I just read an article earlier this week. It was on LinkedIn, and it really resonated. And I posted it. It was about listening and how important listening is in any role, specifically as a coach and specifically as a leader. And Amber mentioned that about asking, how was your day? Not just to ask the question, to check a box, to make sure you're doing the thing as your manager and leader that you've been told to do, but because you actually care how someone's day is going, and because you want to listen and do something if there's something needed to be done. So that resonated with me. I think whether it's being a coach of a sports team, I think it's so important that our kids are hearing that too from their coaches, you know, so they can start to develop that as a habit. Because once that becomes a habit, when you get into the working environment, that's just part of who you are. It's ingrained in you. And as I'm seeing different leaders and interviewing different leaders, I think that's just one thing that we're still working on, I think, as a society and in businesses. And so I appreciate Amber for being in that role and being with our students and really encouraging that and being the one that's listening to our kids. You know, sometimes, I don't know about you, Matt, but you come home and yes, my kids are talking to me and I'm listening, right? And I'm putting that in quotation marks, but am I really listening? Am I really listening to listen and not with the intent to just reply with something? And so that was my, I guess, biggest takeaway, probably more words than I needed to explain it. But yeah, I think that's a good one. And I think it's something really important for our listeners to listen to. No pun intended.
Well, like every interview, there's probably about 5 or 10 different things I could probably reflect on, but I'm going to go to Ted Lasso in the show that just makes and puts a smile on my face every day, because what came out of Amber's mouth was belief. And Ted on his wall in his office was believe. And I think Amber's helping these young players believe in themselves to go out in the field, do the best they can, and helping shape just our future leaders. So it's an important role that she's playing. And I respect all these coaches that put all this time and effort into it. It is not easy and oftentimes thankless, especially in the club world where you've got parents throwing a lot of time and money at getting these kids involved with these sports. And sometimes expectations don't align. And so it's sometimes a thankless position. So I got to thank Amber and all those coaches out there that are really stepping up to shape our future leaders in this world. So, Joy, it's been a pleasure. As always, looking forward to the next one.